In India, there is a legend about the creation of men and women that I want to read to you. When he had finished creating the man, the Creator realized that he had used up all the concrete elements. There was nothing solid, nothing compact or hard left over to create the woman. After thinking for a long time, the Creator took the roundness of the moon, the flexibility of a clinging vine, and the trembling of grass. The slenderness of a reed, I always get discouraged about that one, and the blossoming of flowers, the lightness of leaves, and the serenity of the rays of sunshine, the tears of clouds, and the instability of the wind, the fearfulness of a rabbit, and the vanity of a peacock, the softness of a bird's breast, and the hardness of a diamond, the sweetness of honey, and the cruelty of a tiger, the burning of fire, and the coldness of snow, the talkativeness of a magpie, and the singing of a nightingale, the falseness of a crane, and the faithfulness of a mother lion. Mixing all these non-solid elements together, the Creator created the woman and gave her to man. After 1 week, the man came back and said, "Lord, the creature that you have given to me makes my life unhappy. She talks without ceasing and torments me intolerably so that I have no rest. She insists that I pay attention to her all the time, and so my hours are wasted. She cries about every little thing and leads an idle life. I have come to give her back to you because I can't live with her." The Creator said, "All right," and he took her back. After a week had passed, the man came back to the Creator and said, "Lord, my life is so empty since I gave that creature back to you. I always think of her, how she danced and sang, how she looked at me out of the corner of her eye, how she chatted with me and then snuggled close to me. She was so beautiful to look at and so soft to touch. I liked so much to hear her laugh. Please give her back to me." And the Creator said, "All right," and he gave her back. About 3 days later, the man came back again and said, "Lord, I don't know. I just can't explain it. But after all my experience with this creature, I've come to the conclusion that she causes me more trouble than pleasure. I pray thee, take her back again. I can't live with her." The Creator replied, "You can't live without her either." And he turned his back to the man and continued his work. I suppose that's where that old expression came from, "I can't live with her and I can't live without her." Charles Schulz, the creator of peanuts, is most astute in some of his insights to human nature. And this one cartoon that he made up is absolutely classic for our subject today. Peppermint Patty is walking along and she's saying, "I don't even know why I think about him." Now she's laying under a tree and she says, "Chuck just doesn't seem to understand a girl's emotions. In fact, Chuck doesn't seem to understand girls at all." And by this time she's starting to walk toward his house. "Chuck is hard to talk to because he doesn't understand life. He doesn't understand laughing or crying. He doesn't understand love and silly talk and touching hands and things like that. He plays a lot of baseball, but I doubt if he even understands baseball." And by this time, she's at his house, and she's knocking at the door. And so Charlie Brown sticks his head out the door, and she says with a very exasperated look on her face, "I don't think you understand anything, Chuck." And then she walks away. And Charlie Brown is left there with this hopeless look on his face. And he says, "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." As I read that, I thought, you know, how often we've said the same thing. And I'm sure men probably say it much more often than we do. "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." We're very complicated creatures, aren't we? And I think often we don't understand ourselves, let alone understanding men. And there's so much to understand as we really think about it. And not just men, of course, but people. We have to understand their personality types and our own, We have to understand the extrovert-introvert differences of people. We have to understand their backgrounds and their hang-ups. And then we have to understand this basic difference between men and women. And that's, we could talk about all these other things, but we're going to limit ourselves to this morning. Because there's much to understand. There's much to understand for you single gals to really comprehend about the opposite sex. But I especially am interested in the light of the fact that most of you someday will get married. And so important. I think, gals, I probably have cried buckets of tears. My husband says I exaggerate, and that's true. But great many tears, and spent hours of frustration, and spent many times being really upset for absolutely no cause at all, except for the fact that I did not understand the difference between my husband and myself. And he's a marvelous person. I've got the best husband in the world. So if I had these problems, I can imagine what some other people go through. Now, I spent hours studying English and history and language and geology and everything under the sun in college and high school. But I hate to tell you that I spent very few hours on the career that I was going to give my life to, marriage, and understanding these rare creatures that we end up with. And so today I would hope that what we're going to be talking about today would just be a beginning of you doing some more research and some studying and asking some questions. Because maybe as you get married, or before you get married, you will be able to develop some real insight to prevent you from going through a great many frustrating hours that most of us have to go through. Now, the way God created man and woman is beautiful. He created man and woman to complement each other, to fit together, to compensate for each other's weaknesses, not to compete, but to be a unity and to build each other up. The Creator had it all thought through, and He did it in a very wonderful and beautiful way. But those very differences that He created are what causes frustration many times, because that man does not react in the same way most of the time that you react. And you'll discover, if you haven't discovered already, that you have it all planned in your mind. I mean, that man's going to come in the door, and you're going to say this, and then he's going to say that, and then you're going to say this, and you have it all scoped out. The problem is, he comes in that door, and you say this first thing, and he doesn't say that first thing that you've planned. And he's not reacting to that situation at all the way you thought he would. And you think it's wrong, because it's different. You think he doesn't care because he reacted in a, you feel, a negative way. But it wasn't a negative way. Now, let me preface some of this with one thing. As we describe some of these man-women differences, I realize that today there's a great controversy on this one, whether we're different, men and women are different because we were born different, or whether it was because we were raised differently. Well, to me, that matters not one bit at this point. Maybe another generation, it'll mean something. But the fact is that we are different, and we've got to start from where we are. So I don't want to even get into that argument. Also, we'll find many, many exceptions to what I'm going to be talking about. You may find yourself identifying with some of the so-called masculine characteristics. Doesn't mean you're masculine. It just means that you will probably marry a man who identifies with the feminine characteristics. Because I haven't found a couple yet that's really been happy that hasn't been attracted to the opposite. And as I said, that's because God made us to blend together. God gave us two eyes in order to see things from a slightly different point of view. Do you realize that if you only had one eye, you'd see things flat? You lose all dimension when you only have one eye. And it's beautiful, the fact that God has given us two eyes to see things in dimension, in perspective, to see things in the round instead of the flat. Well, men and women are a little bit like that. God created men and women to see things slightly different, to give us dimension in our relationships and in our perspective as we see things. Now, a very creative man, especially, is likely to be identified with some of these feminine characteristics that we're going to talk about. And there again, let me explain. That doesn't mean he's feminine. It just means that he has special characteristics as a very creative person that he needs. And you, if you are a very objective person, for instance, you may marry one of these very creative individuals who would be subjective. And you can kind of look for that as you think about your future mate. We'll get to some questions later if I haven't made that clear. Ephesians 4:32 says in the Phillips, "Be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you." Three very important rules here for relationships, for any relationship. Be kind to one another. So often to those we're closest to, we're the most unkind, aren't we? I don't know if you've ever listened to mothers in a supermarket, but this really gets to me when I hear mothers just screaming at their children for no reason at all, and I think, you wouldn't do that to a perfect stranger, but you do that to those you love. And, of course, we do this to husbands frequently. Be kind to one another, courteous. Be understanding. A man once said that a long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other. And to be understood, it's a love. The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And I might reverse that. The woman who understands one man is qualified to understand pretty well everything. It's a difficult task. And by the way, gals, it's a lifelong task. You'll never thrive. But how wonderful to have the God of wisdom to give us wisdom as we pray. And so often I fall back to James 1:5. So often. In all relationships, but especially a relationship with my sweetheart and my daughter, if any of you lack wisdom, it says, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. What a promise, huh? Because I can't understand these complicated creatures, but God made them. I can't understand myself, but God made me. So when I ask him, and I say, help, Lord, I really don't know about this one. And then this verse says, be forgiving. Someone has once said that a good marriage is really the union of two awful good forgivers. And this is true. And guys, I might say, like my mother told me very many times before I got married, if you don't love a man enough to be willing to forgive him 20 times a day, don't marry him. Well, it hasn't been quite that bad. But really, forgiveness is a part of any relationship, isn't it? It's a part of your relationship with your roommate. It's a part, very definitely, in all of your relationships with men. And in understanding men, you're going to need much forgiveness. Just overlooking them. Overlooking not them, but overlooking some of the things that you don't understand at the time. Forgiving them. A man once said, when we quarrel, my wife becomes hysterical. And the other man said, don't you mean hysterical? And the other man said, no, I mean historical. She brings up everything I ever did. Well, gals, we're very prone to do this with anybody. We say we forgive, but boy, you know, we put it back there in the recesses of our heart to bring up the next time that they've offended us. This verse says, be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Well, how much has he forgiven you? Everything. Completely. If you're in Christ today, God sees you as perfect. No matter how ugly you are, and no matter how ugly you know you are. Because God did it for Christ's sake, and he sees us in Christ. And he sees you sitting here today perfect. No spot or wrinkle on you. He sees you as perfect. Isn't that great? Boy, I revel in that fact, that I can have perfect fellowship with God because he sees me as perfect. And he doesn't say, Carol, look at all the things you did yesterday. He just knows all the things I did right, which weren't very many, but that's what he sees. And yet he knows every fault I have, and but across it's written, paid for by Jesus Christ. How about you and how you forgive people? Do you forgive them perfectly? It takes Christ's wisdom, doesn't it, and Christ's understanding and Christ's love to be able to do that. But it's part of it. Well, our differences. Let me illustrate just our thinking differences with a little story. True story. A wife told me not too long ago. They had been married a short time, maybe about 7 weeks, and it had been a very busy time for them. They had a lot of entertaining and a lot of things that occupied their time, and so they really hadn't had time to communicate the way she wanted to communicate. And one Sunday afternoon, there was a little brief respite, and they were laying there together on the bed, and she had her head on his chest, and there was silence for a minute, and then she said, what are you thinking? And there was a moment's silence, and he said, oh, I think about that project that I have to do for the boss tomorrow and how complicated it is, and I was wondering what to do about it. Well, now you're women. You know what her reaction to that was. Silence. Then she said, oh. And then she waited. Now, of course, you know that she was waiting for him to ask her what was the matter. But he didn't. He said, are you going to fix dinner? She said, maybe later. And he said, oh, well, I'll teach you how to fix cheese docks. And she blew up. Now, a lot of little things here that I want you to think about. Now, of course, he was flabbergasted when she blew up. Here he was trying to be nice to her and teach her how to fix cheese dogs. He did not realize that she was blowing up because they were not thinking on the same wavelength. Now, in all relationships, gals, it takes, in order for you to really go deeper in a relationship and understand, you've got to have three basic ingredients. You've got to have humor, you've got to have openness, and you've got to have understanding. Now, if she had said right at the very beginning, when he said he was thinking about this project, if she had been able to laugh and say, you big lug, I wanted you to be thinking about me, that would have been the end of it, wouldn't it? Or if she had had openness, and maybe not the humor, but she had said, hey, look, I'm really feeling romantic, and I want you to be feeling romantic, too. I feel the need for closeness. That would have been the end of it. He would have understood. And then if she had understanding, just the fact that a man does not think like a woman. And in this situation, he was thinking very typically like a man. And she wanted him to be thinking very typically like a woman. And she needed the understanding. If she'd had any one of these three ingredients, she wouldn't have blown up. He still thinks she blew up because he offered to fix her cheese dogs, and he'll probably never offer to help her fix anything again. Isn't that too bad? This is part of communications, which is a whole other subject we can't get into today, but none of these things were there. Now, Paul Pompano, who's a noted marriage counselor, says that he feels that these not realizing these basic differences between men and women is one of the major causes for problems in marriage. And I might say it can be the major cause of problems that you have with men in general. So that's why we want to go into some of this. This is one of the problems we have. And they very nicely put all this on, and I don't want it. Can you see that? Do I need to focus it? Like I said, we're very complicated beings. And this says, I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize what you heard is, that what you heard is not what I meant. Okay. Now, if you think about that, you realize that you could have said that. Most of you could have said that. I could have said that. Every once in a while, I kind of shake my head at myself, and I think, now, why did I say it that way? Why did I go all the way around Robin's Hood Barn instead of going right to the heart of the matter? I remember one time Jack was sitting reading, and I came in, and I said, guess what? He said, what? I said, everybody in our household is going out for dinner. And then I waited. Now, Jack and I had been married for quite a spell. And so by this time, he had picked up many of my little coded messages. So he knew exactly what I was really trying to say. And he kind of grinned, and he said, I suppose that means you want to go out for dinner? It did, and we did. But you know, gals, afterwards I thought, now, why in the world didn't I just come in and say to my sweetheart, who is a very open, dear person, hey, everybody's going to be out of our house for dinner. I don't have to fix dinner. Why don't we go out and have hamburgers? And he would have said, great. But do you know, if he hadn't have picked up my coded message, that I would have probably stirred the soup with tears in my throat and thought, he just doesn't understand me at all. Isn't that awful? But you know, you'll catch yourself doing that. You really will. And it's part of these differences. It's why we have to know ourselves and other people. Proverbs says, by wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. And boy, that includes a whole lot more than the literal house that we live in and the relationships between husband and wife. That includes relationships of all kinds. The house, the roommate situation you're living in, the team that you're involved with, the men, the leadership that are over you, involves a great many things. Well, some of the differences. Let's go into them. A man, generally speaking, is objective. A fact is a fact is a fact with a man. With a woman, a fact isn't quite a fact. Or maybe it's a little more than a fact. But usually we can see three or four sides to this question. Now, the implications of this are many. And we really need to see this. A man can see, and I'm saying generally speaking, things much more realistically. They can see the big picture. They can see more into the future. And they're much more concept-minded. It's why most men are better at big business than women. I don't mean that women can't be good at it, but they're generally speaking better because they can see in concept form. Woman tends to be subjective. Now, this isn't any better or worse, gals. Don't think that. In fact, it's a very beautiful thing that God made us this way. We need to be subjective. We need, by subjective, I mean we feel things more. We use our emotions more. In man life, wait till you have children. You'll see why that's so necessary. You need to empathize with them. And yet the husband, he comes along and he's very objective, and he sees the decision lots of times that really ought to be made. Sometimes I am so subjectively involved with Lynn, my daughter, that it's like I can't make that decision because I'm feeling so much with her that I want to do what she wants, but she doesn't even know what she wants. And then Jack can come along, he can see both sides of the picture and make a very objective decision, even though he loves Lynn very much. So it's a very beautiful thing that God has made us this way. Now, let me give you a couple of illustrations of this. A man might come home and say, the Joneses aren't going to be able to come for dinner tomorrow. And the wife automatically will think, I wonder what we did to offend them. Now, this goes on and on and on the subjectiveness. But let me go on here. Because of this, let's see, is that my next point? Yeah. He's essential-minded, and she's detail-minded. Now, here again, this is very important for her to be detail-minded. Most women really can be fixing dinner, listening to a child compose a letter to Santa Claus, listening to another practice scales on the piano, and talking over the phone at the same time. We have a mind for details, most of us. It's one reason why a woman, in a way, hates to supervise another woman, because the woman that's being supervised picks up all these little details and bugs the supervisor lots of times. There are other implications of that we won't need to go into. A man, on the other hand, if you've been around men in a meeting, let's say it's a supervisor's meeting, and they are trying to strategize, they are trying to get across a big concept. Let me give you a for instance in this. Maybe a bunch of men and maybe one woman got together to plan this conference. And they're thinking in the overall conference. But the woman can get thinking, now will that be good for Jane? We can't help it. We're thinking about people, we're thinking in detail. And that's good. Somebody needs to think about Jane, see? But the men, it just absolutely bugs men when you bring up Jane, when they're trying to talk about, you know, 50 people here or 100 people or whatever you've got. Understand men, because if you bring up Jane at this particular time and they don't want to bother with Jane, you know what you're going to think? They aren't as understanding of people as you are. They aren't concerned as you are. Wrong. Wrong in one way. They are more concerned with things. It's true. You are more concerned with people, but that doesn't make it better or worse. You see? See how you need to understand these things? Did you ever start talking to a man and you started to explain a particular problem? A problem that Jane was having. And Jane was having this problem, and you explain all about this problem, and then you say, you know, it's the same problem that Susie was having last year. You remember Susie. Susie was the one that had, that Bert was her brother, and he was on the basketball team, and you start going on and on and on like this. Did you ever do this? And you looked at the man, and his eyes had kind of crossed. He got kind of glazed. You realized you'd lost him? Your immediate reaction can be, he's not listening. He's not really interested. Well, dear heart, that is your mind for detail. And he does not have that mind for detail that you do. So understand it. Jack was so proud of me the other day. I listened for 4 hours to a gal that was having some problems. And very interesting kind of story. And I don't tell anybody but Jack when I hear these stories. But unless somebody specifies that I can't tell Jack, I tell him everything. And so I was telling him about this, and I condensed it all in 10 minutes. And I said, "That was 4 hours worth of 10 minutes. What do you think of that?" And he says, "I'm proud of you, honey." But we need to learn to do this with men. It's very important. On the other hand, men need to use this mind for detail that we have. You know, someone has suggested that a woman's intuition is really not intuition at all. It's simply her mind for detail. And it could very well be that as we go into a situation, filtered into the computer of our minds are 20 little details. You know, that raised eyebrow, that tone of voice, that the way that person said that thing. And we filter this all into the computer of our minds, and it comes out a feeling, an intuition. And 95% of the time, I just made up that figure, but it's a lot, we're right. And Jack has learned to use this. And we'll go into a situation, and we'll come out of it, and he'll say, "Now, how did you feel about that situation?" And he uses that information to help him delve into the facts. Now, he doesn't let it bias his factual mind, fortunately, because I could, you know, wouldn't that be awful to kind of feed him wrong information and to make him feel the wrong way about a situation. But fortunately, he is objective. And he'll take that information, delve into some facts, and lots of times come up with things that are very necessary. On the other hand, I don't see what he sees in that situation. I didn't get the big strategy picture and whatever it was. He saw different things than I saw. And that's great if you work together on it, isn't it? And guys, your team leader, whatever, if they'd use that with you, they'd be far better off. But maybe they're not ready for it. Maybe you have to wait to get a husband for that. I don't know. But because men think this way, gals, often they don't observe what you want them to observe. And this can be a matter of frustration to you. I remember going looking at a house with a friend of mine who was buying this house. And when we got back, the girl who was living with us at the time said, "Hey, what's the house like?" So I was describing it, how the wallpaper in this one bedroom matched the blinds. And how there were these little flowers in another bedroom, and on and on. And Bob looked at me as though I were describing a totally strange house. And he says, "Carol, are you kidding? Were all of those things in that house?" And I says, "Yeah, didn't you see them?" And he said, "No." He had seen a nice house. Let's buy it. My husband sometimes, many times, goes to conferences that I'm not able to attend. And he comes home, and I'm just dying to hear about the whole thing. He says, "Tell me about the conference." He tells me all about it in 15 minutes. And I used to think, you know, he doesn't care to tell me all about it. But still, I've learned that he has told me all about it in his way. He is condensed, yes. That's his mind. Now, he is learning, on the other hand, there are two sides to this, and of course, when he talks to the men, he tells them the other side. They've got to learn to note some of those details that you want to hear about and write down all those people who are going to have babies and all those people who are engaged and stuff, you know, so that he can tell me. There are two sides to this, but we're just talking about your side this morning. How to understand them. Don't expect them to tell you all those details. One reason why it's so important for girls to help other girls, as well as for men to help girls. In training, I mean. The men can give you the concepts in probably a better way than another girl could give you the concepts of Christian growth, let's say. But they don't fill in all those details. And we need the woman-to-woman type of training in order to fill in those details and to really be able to help another new Christian grow. All right? Let me give you another couple examples of this detail and mindedness. A man might say, that's a good-looking car, but how does it run? A woman will think, but I don't like the color. See, we picked up a detail, and they are interested much more in the overall. They're liable to say, and this is maybe an exaggeration, but that speaker had good ideas. And you may be thinking, did you notice that his shirt matched his tie? Not that you will have missed the good ideas. I don't mean that at all. But you picked up a detail that they probably didn't even see. Okay. Let's go on here. They tend to be more logical, more thing-centered, and you tend to be more emotional, more people-centered. Now here again, this is not bad. It's just different. Some women are whizzes at mathematics and logic, and some men are totally helpless in it. It has nothing really to do with that. But it's that they can get very irritated with when they have thought through a fact, and then you come with five other ways to look at that thing. You've seen five other ways to look at that thing, but it can irritate them. Because, as I said, you'll be thinking about Jane, or you'll be thinking about Susie and how this will affect them. You'll be thinking about people. You'll be thinking with your emotions on this. Now, this one we're going to, it doesn't have to do with you as much now. But a man identifies with a life work, and when you get married, you will identify more with the home. It might help your mother with this one, because this can cause much heartache. You see, a woman thinks of her home as being an extension of her personality. When you get married, you'll see that. Maybe you think of your apartment as being an extension of your personality because you fixed it all up, or your room. And a man thinks of his life work as being an extension of his personality. And therefore, dear gal, as a wife, if you neglect something about his business that he's asked you to do, he takes it as a personal rejection. Whereas the things that he neglects around the home, without realizing it, you're taking it as a personal rejection. You know, you've asked him to fix that water faucet, and it doesn't get done until 6 months from now. And all of this time, you're thinking of it as a personal rejection. He doesn't think about it that way at all. It happens to be 20 down in his priority list. So this is another thing for you to learn to understand. And then a very important one for you, as well as wives, is that a man uses speech mainly to convey a fact or an idea. A woman uses speech a great many times to convey feeling and emotion. Now, let me illustrate that. If Elaine here were to ask me how I liked her blouse, how I liked her flax suit, which is it? And I said to Elaine, I like it. Elaine would look at me and think she hates it. And chances are I would. I have got to create to Elaine an emotion, a feeling. I've got to say to Elaine, oh, I really like that. That color is so good on you. It's just an adorable flax suit. And then maybe she'll believe me. All right, we're creating an emotion, a feeling. Now, if a man looks at Elaine and she says, how do you like my slack suit? And he says, I like it. She better believe it. But she won't, because we expect them to create the same kind of feeling that we would expect a woman to create, don't we? I remember a new bride told me this. She said that she'd been married a year, and she bought a new dress, and she came home, and she asked her husband how he liked it, and he said he liked it, so she took it back. And she bought another one, and she said, well, how do you like this one? And he said, well, it's fine, but
I really like the last one better. Why did you take it back? And she burst into tears. A man speaks to convey a fact. It's very important for you to remember, girls. You have got to take them at their word and not try to read things into what they're saying. A girl called me one time and said that we had invited up to for Thanksgiving dinner. And she had talked to her boss about it. And he said, well, yeah, that'd be okay. And she thought he didn't want her to go. So she called me and she said, oh, I don't think my boss wants me to go, so I don't think I better come. And I said, what'd he say? And she said, well, he said it would be all right, but I don't think he meant it. Fortunately, Jack knew her boss, so Jack called him, and the guy said, well, sure, I'd be happy to have her go. Well, how'd she get the idea that I didn't want her to? See how that works? We read into what they say. Oh, do we ever do this? All the time we do this. And we come up many times with false assumptions. I remember when I first got a hold of this, and gals, I didn't study this till I'd been probably 18 years married. And then I got a hold of Letters to Karen, it was, I think. It's a little book you ought to all read. And I read that chapter on called Viva la Difference, you know, the difference between men and women. And it got me going on studying some of these differences. And it's helped me so much. That's why, you know, I like to share these things with you. But just after I read that, I had knocked myself out while Jack was away on a two-week trip to fix up the guest room. I had gotten red S&H green stamp bedspreads, and I had painted the room, and I had bought a new picture. And so the first thing, of course, when he walked in the door after I greeted him, was that I ushered him upstairs and rather dramatically flung open the guest room door and said, look! When Jack looked around, and he said, yeah, it's nice. One year before that, I would have burst into tears. Or else I would have gotten mad. Because I would have thought, all the work that I went to for this, and all he says is this night, he probably doesn't even like it. That's what I would have thought. But see, understanding these things, I laughed. And he said, well, you laughed again. So I told him. And he said, well, he said, that's right. He said, I really like it. I had to take him at his word. He said he liked it. He liked it. And I can be satisfied with that. Now, this has all sorts of other implications, gals. You're looking at a moon with your sweetheart. And you say, oh, isn't that a beautiful moon? Now, what are you really saying? I mean, you're not saying that's a beautiful moon. You're saying that makes me feel romantic, aren't you? You're trying to create a feeling here. Now, unless your sweetheart understands you better than most men understand women, they're going to take that as a fact. And they may say something very unromantic, like, yeah, that's bright enough to shoot a golf ball by. My husband actually said that, but he said it in jest, as he knew what I was thinking. You look out and it's raining. And you say, oh, it's raining outside. Well, now you could be saying a great many things by that statement. You could be saying, oh, that makes me feel depressed. Or you could be saying, oh, that makes me feel energetic. It makes me feel like cleaning house. But you could be saying a number of things by that simple little statement that it's raining outside. But a man looks out and he says, it's raining outside. He means that the clouds have parted and little drops of water are falling on the ground. Now, not always, of course. But a great many times he is stating a fact while you are stating a feeling. And you can see the great implications of that very thing. Okay, time's going, isn't it? Let me just share with you a couple of funny little physical differences, because outside of the obvious. Because sometimes it's a matter of understanding that we get irritated with each other. Have you ever gotten irritated because a man couldn't sit still as long as you thought he ought to sit still, and you thought that he was not paying attention or that he was bored with what was going on? I don't know, but of course I get an opportunity to see men meeting together lots of times. And instead of sitting there, they're up there pacing back and forth, and they're up and doing something. And I think, good night, what's the matter with them? So I discovered this basic little difference. They have discovered, because of the way we're built, women are built this way and men are built this way. No, the other way around. We're built this way and they're built this way. Their shoulders are broader, their hips are narrower. Our shoulders are not as broad. Our hips sometimes are too big. And so we go this way and they go this way. This is how an anthropologist, for instance, can tell the difference in skeleton between men and women and so on. It's their bone structure. Okay, they've discovered that a man's center of gravity lies in his chest area. A woman's center of gravity lies in her hip area. So really, truly, gals, you can sit longer comfortably than they can. So don't ever get irritated if they've got a pace or if they've got a squirm at church or whatever. They really can't sit comfortably as long as you can. Another little encouraging thing that you might be happy to know is that our fat distribution is different. Ho, 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 ho. And a man's fat distribution, females have fat over the tissues throughout their bodies. And they are warmer because of this. They can last longer, by the way, in a storm to protect their children, probably. They burn up energy more economically. And a man's fat lies under the tissues. And really, truly, it is easier for them to lose weight than it is you. You've got a good excuse, isn't that nice? So they lose weight because of this more easily. You conserve your energy better than they do. Now, a man's main weakness because of these differences is that he's very easily discouraged. His sense of discouragement is his main weakness, someone has suggested. He's the doer, the fighter, the conqueror, and he needs continual vote of confidence. He needs to be esteemed and admired and to have his ego built up. A man can never succeed enough. He'll never be satisfied. A wife can either push or inspire her husband and make or break him. But if he is a success in her eyes, he never really fails. Now, this has great implications for you. Because, gals, I would pray, if I were you, that God would give you the ability to be an encourager, to build into your lives right now the characteristic of being an encourager, to look for good things and to be free to share them with men and with women. But lots of times we do it with women and we don't do it with a guy. And I don't mean flattery. I don't mean compliments that would maybe give them problems. But I'm talking about real encouragement. They need to be told when they've done a good job. They need to be told that you appreciate them making the arrangements for this trip and the way they've carried it out and the way they've taken care of you. And this kind of thing, they need to be told over and over and over again. A woman's main weakness can be her sense of loneliness. She's more loving, more emotional. She is more sensitive. And so she's more sensitive to human loneliness. She experiences a greater need for interpersonal relationships and for heart-to-heart communications and relationships. Well, gals, as I said, I hope that this will just be a jumping-off point for you to start doing some study on some of these differences. There aren't a whole lot of books you can read.
one book for husbands and wives that will give you some of these is How to Understand Your Mate by Cecil Osborne. I suggest everyone that's going to get married to read that one. To Understand Each Other by Paul Tournier is another good one. But let me go back to my first point. And that is that this cannot be accomplished. This understanding cannot be accomplished by just study. It can only be accomplished by knowing God in a deep way. And by getting your understanding from Him. And so you've got 3 days here at the Glen. 3 days more, is that right? And I trust that this will be a time that every single one of you will really grow and go deeper with God, who can give you this kind of wisdom. Now, how do you do that? Well, you'll learn some ways, some new ways, I trust. Let me share with you just an illustration. When Jack and I were going together, in fact, we were engaged, and we were separated for a year. I had a job over in Columbus while he was finishing up school in Wheaton. But we decided that we would write every single day. And so we did. But I was very busy in my job, extremely busy. And I decided that to read those letters every single day was really taking up time that I didn't have. And so instead of reading those letters every single day, I stacked them up on my desk, first one first and underneath. And then Sunday afternoon, which seemed to be a little bit better time, I would start to read those letters in order of arrival. And that seemed to help a little bit. And then after we were married, Jack was going to graduate school and I was working, and we discovered we were spending so much time just talking together. About every little thing. And so we decided that instead of going this route, that maybe what we should better do is to carry a little notebook around in our pockets, and then when something came up, we'd jot it down, and something else came up, why we'd jot it down. And then Sunday night after church was a free time, and so in order of priority, we would whip out our little notebooks and start talking about those things that were important. Now, some of you are frowning. Some of you are looking at me like I'm out of my mind. And some of you really think I'm very strange. And gals, I would be if that story were true. I just told you a great big whopper. We were separated for a year. And we did write every day. But what do you think I did? I was very busy. Well, you know very well I ran home at lunchtime to get those letters. And I read them, and I reread them, and I reread them. And when I did get home and have more time, why, then I'd read them again and read between the lines. I love Jack Mayhall. Love him more today than I did then. But I loved him then. And, of course, the greatest problem in marriages today is lack of communication. And if we'd practice this little notebook trick, I'm sure we'd be divorced by now. But we talked about everything. Sometimes I really do have to practice this notebook trick now when he's away and I can't write him right then. But we talk about everything. And yet, gals, this that I've pictured to you is some people's relationship with God. You know, the Bible is God's love letter to us, to me individually. It's His love letter to you. I never took Jack's letter for the first time to church and read them there. Boy, I got in some closet, in my room, all by myself, and shut the door and read them there. I wanted to be alone when I absorbed that love letter. And yet, some people's idea of Christianity is reading the Bible in church. Maybe for the only time. I hope that's not yours. The Bible is God's love letter to you individually. And unless you're reading that love letter every day and gleaning something very personal from it, you're missing out. You're missing out on this exciting Christian life that God has for you. And it is exciting, and I use that word advisedly. It is exciting. And if it's not exciting to you, then you're missing out on something that God really wants you to have. And it's your fault, not his. Because it's there. And he says, come. I want you. I want to have a personal, wonderful, marvelous fellowship with you. I want to talk to you and have you talk to me. I want to invade your life and be involved in every little detail of it. Let me do it. But you have to read that love letter. Someone has said that when you read the Bible, you ought to mentally be standing at attention. And I like that. Sometimes we kind of read it and hope we'll get something out of it. Instead of reading it like you would a love letter, which it is. And then, of course, the little notebook trick. You know, that's prayer. And sometimes I still catch myself thinking, oh, I'll have to pray about that later. Jot it down in my little notebook? Uh-uh. I don't have to do that. God has said he never leaves me, never forsakes me, never. He's there all the time. And I can take every little thing to him. And you can too. Fall in love with him. He can meet every desire of your heart. He can satisfy your heart completely apart from another person. He really can. Many times he will use other people to do this. And of course, especially if he leads you to marriage, he will use that other person to meet some of the needs of your life. But he can do it completely apart from a person if that person can't or won't do that and meet your needs. But you need to go deep. You need to go so deep that you will be a complete person with him in your own right, before you get married, by the way. And if you develop a spirit of happiness that only he can give you, a spirit of happiness, and then this wisdom that you can ask of God will help you to really understand yourself and understand him. Shall we pray? Lord, you know that today has just been a smattering. It's just been a start. And there's so much to understand. But I pray that you will help each one of us, that you will grant us the wisdom to discern really how to study more and where to study and how to understand. I pray that you will really give us kindness and understanding and forgiveness with those in whom we come in contact. And Lord, most of all, I pray that you will help us to go deeper with yourself, that you will show us day by day your love, your greatness, your interest in us. And oh Father, may we find this Christian life as you want us to be really exciting and joyous and fulfilling. Thank you now for Jesus, because it's of him and through him that we can come into your throne room boldly and ask these things.